Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. If you're a part of yesterday's big move, there was probably a point where you vowed to never buy anything again. Nothing like moving day to bring you to terms with how much you own, and usually you come to the realization that you own too much. So, could renting things be a better alternative to owning them? Here with us in Studio 3 to talk about how borrowing is becoming the new buying is Nancy Kane. Nancy's an historian at the Harvard Business School. She holds the James E. Robison Chair of Business Administration there. Her latest book is Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership. Hello there, Nancy.
Hey there, folks.
Hello, Nancy Kane. So please tell us why renting is becoming hot, 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 Nancy Kane.
So, again, I think we want to ferret out the, you know, journalistic exuberance, right, and search for a nifty story that always accompanies such fervor. But if we strip away a little bit of that, I think what's going on is that a whole plethora of businesses – so this is a force really on the supply side that's, if you will, galvanizing or instigating this trend. Everything from some business we've talked about like Airbnb or Uber or Lyft or Zipcar or Rent the Runway, which we have not talked about, but interesting business. And it was founded, just for our good listeners, by Jennifer Fleece and Jennifer Hyman, two HBS graduates. I believe their class of 2009. I did not
2009?
Know.
2009?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
And this is where you rent an $8,000 wedding dress for $80 at Versace or something.
How brilliant, though. How brilliant is that whole idea?
Right. And you can rent the Versace gown or rent the Chanel bag or, you know, rent the extraordinary necklace and be all put together for several hundred dollars, right? And then it goes back to the warehouse and it goes get cleaned and fluffed and buffed and back out again. I should tell our dear listeners, just so we know, that it's never as simple as the headlines indicate, that Fleece and Hyman, the two entrepreneurs, very successful business, have opened one and soon to be two retail stores in Manhattan. So, you know, sharing and renting and online commerce are more complicated than we might think. But in any event, they're an interesting business. There's a great business that I spent a good half hour on the website on last night called Bag, Borrow, and Steal, I think. Forgive me, I'm not sure. I may have it quite right,
true.
But it's Rent the Handbag. And so you can rent a fabulous Chanel tote for $475 a month. And you can rent a really fabulous small, you know, Alexander Wang clutch for, you know, $175 a month and everything in between. They also have the option of buying again. So it's not all sort of straightforwardly and unabashedly, I must rent or die, as the newspapers would have us. But all these kinds of businesses, I even, on Chelsea Mertz, the fabulous producer of this show's recommendation, looked up renting a dog. So FlexPet, right, which is a growing business in the United States, will let you rent a dog. Again, it's a complicated kind of undertaking. You can think about the ramifications of that. But there's – and
– by the way, the Boston City Council, aren't I?
I think awful.
Voted not to allow that business, if I remember correctly.
That's very interesting because
in
the article I saw, they were talking about possibly opening in Boston and Washington, D.C., subject, I'm sure, to local restrictions and regulations. They are now in they are certainly in New York and Los Angeles. There's all kinds of restrictions, so all of us that love dogs more than life itself don't need to get our knickers in too much of a twist about this right now, because it's got lots of tight strictures on it, according to the article I read. The most interesting to me, and the most, if you will, emblematic of the trend that, you know, this New York Times article, by the way, is owning overrated? The rental economy rises, by Claire Kane Miller. The most interesting business here was renting tools. So hardware stores for decades have rented tools. But guess what? The average power tool in America is used for less than half an hour in its lifetime. So owning a power tool, owning lots of tools, particularly for those of us that aren't the handiest people on earth, makes a lot of sense. And there are lots and lots of places now, including dedicated online companies that will allow you to rent power tools. So what we're really talking about, I think, is on the supply side, is a lot of interest in entrepreneurial interest and activity around being a middle person between the goods and the consumers, and moving those goods back and forth and taking a hefty profit once you build the infrastructure. That's one thing we're talking about. Secondly, we're talking about, you know, the connectivity that we've talked about before when we talk about Airbnb or even eBay, which is really a pioneer in what we call the sharing or renting economy, right, that connects buyers and sellers in new ways. And now with smartphones, you can instantly instantly say, hey, honey, let's fix up the garage tomorrow and put some shelves up. Let me rent a tool and you can have it in 2 days. So I think on the supply side, there's both technology, entrepreneurial activity, and viable business models, not in all cases, but in many of these cases, like Rent the Runway, that make it effective, make it interesting, make it attractive for businesses to get in to the renting and sharing game.
Where'd this start? When I was talking to Marjorie and Chelsea about it this morning, my sense was, maybe people won't even see this as renting. My non-thorough historical analysis was this started big time when you could download a book. I consider that being renting a book as opposed to owning it. When Amazon or whomever it was allowed you to download a book in a second, that was sort of the beginning of this
or
rental economy.
Or stream some music, right, where you don't own the album. You know,
where did this start?
I think of it with Zipcar.
Yep. Zipcar is a little bit later, started by a Cambridgeport parent, I should say.
So there's always been libraries, right? There's even been, you know, music lending libraries. So I think the concept of renting something or borrowing it for a while for a fee is not new. What is new is this idea that you can get all kinds of – you can convince people and people are interested in owning briefly or holding briefly all kinds of experiences and mostly goods. There's a lot of talk, dear listeners, about whether all this renting is emblematic of an experience-based economy. I think
especially expensive experience, right?
Right. I think that's poppycock. I mean, experience has always been a critical part of all kinds of consumption. So there's nothing really brand new there. But I think that the idea that this would become a much more commonplace occurrence for consumers and therefore for businesses really is based in the idea of online connectivity. Right. That's, you know, get on your phone, get the Zipcar, get the Uber car, rent the house in the south of France, get the tiara for the big event that you're going to at the Park Plaza. All of that, right, is really enabled and made more frequent and made much more both acceptable and intriguing by gotta have it now. And that's about smartphones. Right. That's about the internet and smartphones. So I think Zipcar is a great candidate. I think, you know, downloading a book is a great candidate. Those are streaming music is a version of this. In some sense, it's not brand new. It's part of a continuum of technology and consumer behavior morphing and changing in a way that has lots of roots in the past
And in the current, it seems to me, I mean, one of these articles we read this morning suggests that millennials are living in physically smaller space. And if you're living in smaller space, not only is it nice to rent a power tool that you're only going to use, would you say, for 30 minutes ever after you buy it for $190, but also if you have no place to put it.
Just like a Zipcar, right? I could not agree more. So my interest is always first and foremost on the demand side. You know, my work on entrepreneurship began on what was changing for consumers and how did entrepreneurs pick up on that, whether we're talking about lattes or, you know, rent a ball gown or, you know, Marshall Field creating this luxurious department store experience on the Chicago, you know, in the Midwest on the plains back in the 1860s. So I thought long and hard over the last couple of days about what is it on the demand side. So a piece of it is millennials and, as younger people often have, as urban dwellers always have, living in smaller spaces. I think there's a bunch of other interesting stuff, though. Another aspect is the incredible, if you will, expectation of consumers now at virtually all rungs of the socioeconomic ladder, save for the very poorest, that of course I can carry a Chanel bag.
Yes.
Right? I can have access. That, you know, and some of this is about the extraordinary prosperity globally. This is not confined to America. Globally, of the millennial generation. There is nothing that compares to it in terms of a cohort in prosperity in the history of capitalism or in the history of childhood or in the history of parenting. It is simply, you know, unprecedented. So I don't think it's any surprise when you look at how so many kids have grown up, not only in terms of what they've had, but what they've had access to by virtue of smartphones and global connectivity and global brands that will... You know, I'm 22 years old. I'm going to my first, you know, big college, you know, dance. By the way, that might be in Newport. I better have an Alexander Wang dress, or I better have a Pruenza Scholler, you know, handbag or clutch, and some Cartier jewelry to go with it.
By the way, if I knew what a Pruenza handbag was, I'd want
Pruenza
to rent
Scholler.
One. My guess is
very, very expensive. Okay.
Nancy
very, very popular.
So right design. About that, because I see that with my kids,
that
and you see it with their friends, even kids. kids that didn't come from lower
wealth.
Class or working class, you know, background. They're going to go. Well, Victoria's Secret is not that expensive, but underwear is very expensive at Victoria's Secret.
They're going to rent underwear.
They're not going to rent it, but the idea that you would even buy it there when you're not making a lot of money—it's expensive.
Right.
But that's kind of a birthright,
right? So aspirational consumption—we always talk about
that's
something
a great
you can
term.
aspire to. But we now have generations of people, and this, by the way, is not confined to millennials, that now have an expectation: I should have access. I can have access. I want access right now, right here and now, to that luxurious item. Right, or to that limo ride, whatever.
Right.
Choose your or that house in the south of France at Airbnb, which I can get for $500 a night, where I could never afford to rent it for a week. So I think some of this is about expectation, rising expectations. A second aspect of this, so very much kind of nestled with, incredible expectations of prosperity and the consumption that accompanies it, is a kind of I've got to have it now. This impatience, the shortening of time frames and attention spans that is so much part of our modern life. I better have that handbag right here and now, right? And
I can't afford it right now,
but I can afford to rent it for a week,
night. Right?
And I'll get it. I'll pay the extra $27 to have it FedExed to me, so I can have it tomorrow. You, by the way, that is not uncommon. So I think that some of this is about I deserve it. I expect it, and I expect it now. And renting that, right, whereas, layaway, if you go back to a very old, kind of now seemingly quaint way of financing consumer purchases, which was before mass credit cards, general credit cards, right, layaway was partly about that, but you laid it away and you didn't actually get the dress or the expensive handbag to actually put all those installments of payments into the bank at whatever department store. That's all gone. I don't want to wait 3 months. I want it tomorrow. So some of this is about impatience and expectation and a kind of presumption. I'm not judging. I'm using the word in a more objective sense, a presumption that this is part of my life.
Can I come up with another
Absolutely.
Candidate for where this began? Forget Amazon.
Where?
When you mentioned, I don't know what you just mentioned, Nancy, the trigger, this talking to Nancy Kane from Harvard Business School, talking about the rental economy, renting versus owning. You know where it was? High school proms and tuxedos. Mm. Virtually every young girl
bought
a dress.
The dress.
Right.
I don't know that one single boy ever bought a tuxedo.
Right.
You went and you got measured. You had to return it within X number of days. And that was long before rental was big. So step back from this for a second. Are retail giants quaking in fear that as millennials become middle-aged, nobody's going to be buying virtually anything and they're essentially going to be renting almost everything?
I just don't see that at all.
Why?
Because
people want to own too. I mean, there's a internal conflict.
Well,
why?
A couple of data points. People want to own. People get accustomed to things. They want to have something. I mean, the interesting thing about all these websites is you can buy it and you can buy the pet too. You can get none of them have the exclusion that you have to send it back if you have the money or have the credit.
Understood.
Have a line of credit. Yep. You know, MasterCharge or MasterCard will make it possible, and you can do it. The ownership is by no means over. Again, that's, I think, attention-grabbing headlines more than truth or more than reality. But there are other interesting evidence points, right? The idea that the possibility of owning all these things, that's so much part of this. Why would these very savvy women that run Rent a Runway open up retail stores? That's expensive. That's fixed cost.
Yeah.
That depends on ownership. Why would you do any of that if you really believed it was all about renting? Established retail players always have the option of playing on some of this, right? They can always, they have the logistics system set up. And the most expensive part about establishing these businesses, whether you're talking about renting ball gowns or renting pets, is establishing the infrastructure, right, to move the gowns in and out of post office boxes and FedEx boxes and to clients and to clean it and all that in between rentals. So all these players, established retail stores, have the option and have the infrastructure which they can leverage effectively or amortize, to use the financial term, to do this. So they always can pull that trigger or without the same kind of difficulty that startups have. I think that's another piece of it. I think there's something else as well, which is that retail is never is never solely about who has possession of the service or the good or the offering. I like
what does that mean?
Retailers has always been about theater. I mean, Stanley Marcus, right, one of the man who really built Neiman Marcus into Neiman Marcus, understood this better than any other modern commentator. He said this, you know, years and years before online commerce had been so popular. He said people are never going to stop wanting to buy things and to go into stores, because a lot of what retail is, and this is why when we get something and own it, the glow fades so quickly, is we're not just purchasing the thing. We're purchasing the feelings that cluster in our hearts and heads about, oh, I really want to have this car, or, oh, I really want my latte this way, or, oh, I really, really want to buy that leather bicycle, you know, biker jacket. We're buying a piece of hope and ideas about ourself and our place in society that we're always questing for. And the reason we, you know, there are many women like myself who own more than one, you know, zip-up jacket is because we are purchasing, and men have all of these kind of wishes too, so let's not make this a gendered discussion, is we're purchasing those kind of feelings and those kind of experiences. Going into a store in itself is part of that. So I don't think any of this is going away, and I don't think punching it into your phone and getting the box the next day on your doorstep is the whole enchilada. So if I were any big established player, I wouldn't be too worried about this. Last point, the coda to all this. If it's all about renting, then why isn't Amazon the leading player in renting anything? Because Amazon
oh, that's a good point.
Is, well, remember when we talked about Amazon yes. some months ago and the yes. gazelles, right? The gazelle being their code word for anybody they want to eat up. And beat, you know, to a pulp in the marketplace. There have been few companies as aggressive, as opportunistic, as lithe ultimately, even though they spent and lost a ton of money building their infrastructure, as Amazon. If the Amazon fundamentally believed that retail and ownership were over, we'd be experiencing something very, very different when we logged onto their website. Because Jeff Bezos wants to own the world, and he
doesn't want to rent it.
He doesn't want to rent it. He wants to own the world, and that depends on people wanting to buy things. So when Bezos exits all of what he's doing, right, online, then and sets up Amazon Rental, then I'm willing to revisit this kind of, if you will, prognosis about retail ownership and the future of commerce.
Nancy Kane, is this happening with ownership of like condos as well or not? Do we know? I mean, are people more into renting their little condos?
I got a quick one for you before she answers. Remember the great Barney Frank quote when he was chair of the Financial Services Committee? I've always said the American dream should be a home, not home ownership.
Right.
I mean, that is a variation, I guess, on this theme, right?
Well, I mean, so you have to be the numbers there are not complicated, right? And they're very business cycle sensitive, right? The cycles of home ownership, whether we're talking about newly constructed homes, condominiums, or existing homes, we can track that. You know, the last 2 years have been overall, right, adjusted for small blips, have been overall all about exuberance at lots of price points, lots of income points in the socioeconomic ladder of people trying to buy their homes.
Yeah.
There are lots and lots of young people who might be traveling in Zipcar, but they're putting money away right now, right, to put a down payment on a home because they want to get in on the homeownership ladder early. Bully for them. I don't think we're going to be passing around homes in the same way we talk about vacation stays at Airbnb.
Nancy Kane, it's always fantastic to talk to you. Thank
I love
you
this
very
topic.
Much.
I love it.
It's really interesting.
I love it, too. Nancy Kane is an historian at the Harvard Business School, where she holds the James E. Robeson Chair of Business Administration. Her latest book is Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership.
Good to see you, Nancy.
Up next, we're going to ask you guys about renting versus owning. Does the idea of doing away with your stuff and renting it instead appeal to you? That's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.